Hi. Thank you for joining us at You Inc. My name is Ria Greif, and I'm here with you today, as I am every week, to help you build the most important brand in your life, which is you. When we talk about building, we use tools, and the same goes for building our brand. These wellness tools will help elevate your emotional intelligence and help to lead you in a more positive, successful direction in life and in business. Some of these tools you will find helpful immediately, and some you will put on the hook in the garage for another time, depending on when you will need to use it. This week's tool is optimism and why it is important to have this ability to face work and life with a positive outlook and to make the choice to include this tool in your life. Once I have demonstrated to you that this is a great tool for your brand. First, the buy-in. Why, Ria, do I want to be a silly Pollyanna? Have you seen the world around us? There are wars, species are being eradicated, the oceans are polluted, my cat is scratching up my furniture, we have questionable leaders. Well, positive thinking moves us and our lives in a direction that solves problems and benefits not just ourselves, but our support systems, both at home and at work. You will set goals, achieve them more easily, so put on your rose-colored glasses and say, I'm going to assist in Doctors Without Borders. Species are being given protections. We have many championing their causes and developing awareness around their needs, and the same for oceans. Leaders can be castrated of their power, and your cat at least isn't spraying everywhere. Simply stated, optimistic people live longer, have less risk of heart attacks, are more grateful, sleep better, and are less depressed because they are proactive. They take action, they get things done, such as exercise before they get infirm. They are persistent, they're goal-oriented, so failure triggers new tries, not giving up. I know when I hear the word no, that just means I have to find the reach around. They are creative, they try multiple approaches when one thing fails, and they are tenacious. And they are confident, the future is bright, things will work out in the long run, and they do. So, as stressors, which are inevitable, when they come your way, you decide whether or not you have control for each stressor and figure out where you can exert your influence and energy. What can you do to make your situation better, different, easier? One of the great things about optimism is that it is the hallmark of emotional intelligence. And teaching emotional intelligence to your children is also a hallmark of emotional intelligence. You must lead by example. And in turn, it leads to better planning for success, which causes them as students to be successful academically, to have healthy relationships with themselves and others. A great book about how to cultivate a better parent-child relationship while also nurturing empathy, honesty, resilience, and independence, all qualities of an emotionally intelligent individual, is Raising Human Beings by Dr. Ross Jean. And you can find all the books we discuss on the show and links to articles about our You Inc. tool on our website at wcbe.org. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to You Inc. on 90.5 WCBE. Today's You Inc. tool is optimism. So this all sounds delightful, doesn't it? Okay, so now you want to cultivate optimism. Let's get ready to make that glass more than half full. According to researchers, anyone can learn optimism. In the book Learned Optimism by Martin Seligman, much of this can be attributed to how you explain events to yourself. For example, permanence. Optimistic people believe bad events to be more temporary than permanent and bounce back quickly from failure, whereas others may take longer periods to recover or may never recover at all. They also believe good things happen for reasons that are permanent rather than seeing the transient nature of positive events. Optimist points to specific temporary causes for negative events. Pessimists point to permanent causes. So the guy that cut me off isn't a terrible driver or a jerk. He was worried about his toddler choking in the back seat and didn't see me. This also helps with anger management, but that is another You Inc. tool for another program. Pervasiveness. Optimistic people compartmentalize helplessness, whereas pessimistic people assume that failure in one area of life means failure in life as a whole. Optimistic people also allow good events to brighten every area of their lives, rather than the particular area in which the event occurred. And they often are the spark of these silver linings. For example, if you have a bad day and you go through the Starbucks drive-thru, you can say, "Hi, how are you doing?" to the guy who gives you your coffee, who will in turn be more careful with your coffee, might even offer you extra whipped cream. And so you leave with coffee with extra whipped cream. Or you can go through the same drive-thru, not make eye contact, not say anything nice, and the person who delivers your coffee did not spend any time taking care of your coffee, and it tastes terrible. You can make the choice. Do you want to have coffee with extra whipped cream, or do you want to have yucky coffee? And finally, personalization. Optimists blame bad events on causes outside of themselves, whereas pessimists blame themselves for events that occur. Optimists are therefore generally more confident. They don't take things personally if, for example, my boss didn't invite me out to lunch with the rest of the team, could be because she didn't think I needed a pep talk, or she knew I was under a time crunch and has plans to reward me later, as opposed to my boss hates me or he is a meanie. Optimists also quickly internalize positive events while pessimists internalize them. Businesses would benefit from more optimistic workers as they are more successful. In fact, Fortune 100 companies are hiring people based on their positive outlook and their likability, particularly in the higher echelons, according to the articles in Time Magazine and the Wall Street Journal. How would you know in an interview if the person you're interviewing is positive? What I like to do is ask people about the weather. Optimistic people usually say something nice about it. So even if it was raining last night, for example, at least it isn't so cold that it was snowing. The focus then in business is that each individual worker has a set point of discouragement, and to find the ones that respond to this with a readiness to conquer rather than to feel dejected. But how can I be optimistic if I'm so stressed out, broke, in pain, lonely, you might ask? When you feel challenged this way, keep in mind that it is a choice how you decide to interpret it and act on it, barring the course of tragic situations, of course. Holding on to what stresses us and not making the decision to fix it or let go keeps us in a vicious cycle. To move into a virtuous cycle, here's what you need to do. Knowing that wishing the situation to be different won't make it different. Realizing that I'm wasting my energy when I think about what I can't change. Using my energy and thoughts on positive things, things I can influence. Reminding myself of the relief I will feel when I no longer stay attached to what I can't change. The sooner I let go, the easier my life will be, and that frees up our thinking and our energy toward finding solutions and working toward them. So, do you believe that you create much of the stress you experience? Most of you would probably say that other people and situations create your stress. While those people and situations set pressures, demands, and so forth into motion, we are really responsible for our own stress. When we don't take care of ourselves, we are ripe for not being able to manage challenges and tensions that come with life. Hefty workload and chronic problems tend to create more stress and fatigue by pushing us to do more. Over time, heavy workload and unresolved concerns decrease flexibility and creativity and reduce productivity, and they increase the belief that we must continue to work harder and not take time to relax and play. And we end up in a mental and emotional rut characterized by a lack of joy and humor. This road to optimism and emotional intelligence can help you understand your feelings and thoughts and figure out what you need to do to manage your stressors so they won't manage you. It is also the place where you can examine your mindset, see if it's accurate, and adjust it if necessary. This path includes ways to resolve issues and discover the opportunities that are inherent in the unpleasant situations you face. Before you tackle a new stressor, it's important to calm yourself so you can think rationally and clearly and optimistically. Two men looked out of the same jail's bars. One saw mud, the other saw stars. That is a quote from my high school basketball coach.
Chasing beats through ghetto streets to a dungeness temple left by our soul descendants in a quest for peace, energy, and light. If you were to find this temple, do you have the knowledge to enter the temple? Do you want it? And if you had it, would you flaunt it? Well, it's yours.
And if you're just joining us today, we are talking about optimism on U Inc. on 90.5 WCBE. With us today is John Doherty. the executive director of the Greater Columbus Film Commission, whose primary mission is to promote the Greater Columbus area and Central Ohio as a prime filming destination while providing resources to local and visiting productions. The executive director, Mr. Daugherty, oversees all aspects of Film Columbus, and his primary role is to maintain and grow the visibility and viability of Columbus as a filmmaking destination. John Daugherty is also the head of the Film Festival of Columbus, also known as FOCAL, partnering with the Gateway Film Center and the Evil Agency to bring us a new breed of film festival for Columbus and the Midwest. The festival aims to create an experience that brings people together to discover extraordinary films from around the world, and it is through the art and business of film that we foster a community that is more engaged, aware, and alive. He is also a two-time Emmy winner, and he's also newly married and stepfather of two young boys. Welcome, John.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, John, how old are the kids now?
3.5 and 7.5, about.
So you have one that's in school right now.
Yes.
What has been your experience in the role of optimism with children who are in school?
Well, you know, just being optimistic that they're doing their best, and hopefully you teach them to do their best. And, you know, even at the young age of 3.5, the littlest one, being optimistic that he's going to grow out of that crazy stage that he's in. Everybody talks about the terrible twos. Three is much worse than terrible twos, and I know you know that.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that emotionally intelligent people do with their children is when they think to themselves, when you hear children say messages such as, you know, I'm so bad at math, to kind of redirect them, like, you know, you're not doing well in the subject right now, but you are not bad at math. Do you see yourself giving those types of redirections?
Sure. And Katie, my wife, she definitely does that more than I do. Mm-hmm. And we had parent-teacher conferences and got some of his test scores back. And she definitely does that. She said, look, you're and math is a really good subject to bring up because he struggles in math sometimes. But, hey, he does great in social studies and things like that.
Right.
He loves that sort of thing. So it's definitely good to point out the good things and not focus on, you're doing bad in math, you need to study more, blah, blah, blah. So.
Right. And you come from parents who were very positive, they were very supportive, they were artists.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All through growing up at home, my parents were very supportive. I was into every art class and every summer art camp that I could take, and my parents would always support me in doing that, and they never once said, you know, don't follow a creative field because you can't make money doing that. Or a lot of, you know, sadly, a lot of people and parents say that to their kids. But you can, you know, as much as a cliche, you can do whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. It's really true. And you know, if you love what you do, that's more than half the battle.
And, you know, talking about doing what you love, what you want to do. So you went from DJ to being king of film in this town, basically. So do you ever talk to your kids about, you know, how this happened and kind of give them inspiration for that?
Well, they're a little young right now to really understand that. You know, when I do TV interviews and stuff like that, they'll see me on the local news and they'll be like, oh, that's so cool. And then it's like, where's my Batman figurine, you know, or whatever it is, you know.
And how did you go through that journey? How does one go from there to where you are right now?
Wow. You know, a lot of it is staying positive for sure. And I don't always stay positive. I think it's impossible to stay positive all the time. And of course, you know, I get hard on myself sometimes. But going, you know, the actual journey going from DJing up through where I am now, it's just, you know, it's all creative. I was DJing for years and then was doing graphic design on the side, and that led me to a job doing web design back in the mid-90s when the web was really getting going, and that led me to a job at a local production company. And that production company started a video department, and that video department I ended up being the manager of, and then manager of the creative department. Wanted to break out on my own with some friends and start our own production company. So we did that. We started getting in documentaries and music videos and short films.
Won a couple Emmys.
Yeah, won a couple Emmys, TV commercials and spots for CCAD and things like that. And that naturally led to, you know, wanting to do more film stuff. And then I was invited to be on the board of the Film Commission a few years ago. And then when Tommy McClure stepped down, it'll be 2 years ago right now, I decided to try that. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe I had the 7-year itch from being at Vital. I was there for 7 years, the production company that we started. Maybe that was it. And I wanted to try something new. So I threw my hat in the ring, and then Mayor Coleman sat and talked with him for a while, and he gave me his blessing, and here we are.
Right.
Yeah.
And speaking of here we are, you recently also doubled the tax credits for films to draw more filming to Columbus from $20 million to $40 million. And that raising of the tax credit shows promise that more films can come to Central Ohio. And you said, we're almost at the stage of getting the city to realize that film can be a real industry here. How many times were you told you can't do that, but just kept going?
Well, let me say first that it wasn't just me who, mm-hmm. who got the tax credit raised. The Cleveland Film Commission and the Cincinnati Film Commission had a lot to do with it as well, and they lobbied really hard to get that raised. What I try to do, and I tell people to do the same, is surround yourself with the people that you want to become. And so if you surround yourself with people who are saying, yes, we can do this, then you can, then you're surrounding yourself with optimism and positive people, and it just worked out. You know, we have still a long way to go. There's still some things that I want to change about the law mm-hmm. aren't really in Central Ohio's favor, but mm-hmm. you know, one step at a time. And people that I work with and people on the board are like, you know, hey, don't look at it as you didn't get what you wanted. Look at it as, you know, a small win. Mm-hmm. And so we just keep building on those small wins, and it'll just continue to grow.
And I think what you're referring to is Starz recently bought the rights to My Blind Brother. It was in the low 7-figure range, which is great. And it showcases how the Ohio Film Tax Credit can be used, and I think this is what you're referring to, in a way that not only allows filmmakers to fulfill their creative vision, but also stimulates real economic growth within the state of Ohio. Len Hartman had said that, the president and chief operating officer of the Ohio Film Group. And in fact, you're working towards keeping a cap per project, because the current House bill calls for a cap per year, but not per project. So people like Marvel, for example, could come into Cleveland and just take it, wipe it all out. Mm-hmm. And so you want to kind of make this to where we keep fostering the film here mm-hmm. as well as inviting this in here. Would you say that it's this optimism that continues to drive you to believe that we can eventually have big Hollywood films that come in here and they don't have to go to the East Coast and West Coast?
Yeah, sure. Definitely. You know, when I took over a couple of years ago, I kind of switched our focus to the small, to those smaller films, the $1 million to $3 to $5 million films, because I felt that that would help grow the industry here, grow the crew base, and, you know, allow for bigger films to come in later on.
So it was optimism also that probably gave you the idea about Focal. And the Film Festival Columbus that is happening this coming year, June 15th through the 18th in 2017. And you're currently also accepting early bird submissions for the Film Festival. Can you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Sure. We started the Film Festival. This summer will be our 6th year. And we actually started talking about it, I don't know, 8 or 10 years ago. And the reason we started talking about it stems back to wanting to bring more films into Columbus to be made here. And we struggled with the idea of, okay, how are we going to attract producers and directors to come here to see what we have to offer? And a way that we thought to do that was kind of a back doorway. Let's have a film festival. Let's invite some of those directors and producers to come in. Because once we get people here, it's an easy sell. Mm-hmm. It happens all the time when I invite directors and producers to come in who are scouting for a film. They get here, they're like, oh my God, we had no idea this was going mm-hmm. on here. This place is great. Collaboration is amazing. Mm-hmm. They want to come. So the film festival was basically designed to bring in producers and directors. And it's worked out pretty well. We've had a few people come back and want to come back and shoot films that we showed at the festival. But it's fun. It's great. I think it's great for the city. It raises awareness for Columbus and what we're doing.
It is, and I've attended a number of events, and yeah. I've really enjoyed a lot mm-hmm. of the film that I've seen there. Yeah. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that it's interesting, you keep touching on all the things that we talked about, what optimistic people do. Surround yourself with positive people. If you get a no, find that back door. Mm-hmm. So you actually are a living embodiment of what we're talking about. But you wanted to think about, do you ever get challenged by optimism? So one thing that comes to mind is something that I had read about recently, possibly we could say a recent blow to Columbus. And maybe a lot of people aren't even aware of it, but Steven Spielberg is shooting a film that is set in Columbus in the film, but he's shooting it in Birmingham. And you say, and I quote, who knows what goes on behind the scenes. When I read it, because I know you, I kind of chuckled because I can kind of see you like throwing up your arms. So
I think that's exactly what I did.
So when you feel things aren't going well, do you just break out your Emmys for a little bit and hold on to them?
No. I heard about Ready Player One and that being made a year and a half or 2 years ago. And you know, Steven Spielberg has his connections in England and studios over there. And, you know, it just probably wasn't practical to come here and shoot the film. That's okay. I talked to a line producer about a year ago, and they were talking about possibly just coming in and shooting some small scenes here. And I reached out to them again recently and haven't heard anything back, but it's okay. I get it. I understand. They have to do what's best for the film financially. But we are working on trying to get, you know, some sort of premiere here or something like that, which would be great. And yeah, I'm sure the movie would be great. I'm actually in the middle of reading the book right now because I haven't read the book yet, and it's really a good book. So yeah, we're looking forward to what it's gonna bring and what it'll show and raise awareness again for the Central Ohio area.
And again, you know, letting go of the things you can't control and trying to find a way to get a win out of it by having the premiere here. It's amazing.
And being on radio, you can't see, but I'm just shrugging my shoulders like, yes, you're totally great. I can't control Steven Spielberg. So if I could, I probably wouldn't be sitting here.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? So generally we think of creatives. We think about I think film is an art, obviously. I try to watch about a film a day. And there's so much talent. There's actors, directors, writers, casters, cinematographers, set designers, costume designers, people who write the scores. And they're just so good that you're blown away and because they have just an effect on you. Do you think most of the creative people in the film industry, just asking about creatives in the film industry because you're familiar with them, do you think that most of them might be emotionally intelligent?
Yeah, I think you have to be in that sort of industry because it's constantly changing. You're dealing with all kinds of different people, from egos that are outrageous to people who are really kind and genuine. You know, you run the gamut of people in that industry, and I'm sure you do in music industry and maybe it's just creative industry in general. Mm-hmm. There's all that you have to deal with. So yeah, I think you have to be positive, emotionally stable.
Yeah.
And if not, I don't know. Right. Maybe it's not just going to work out.
Right. So you obviously have a good team around you. You've spoken about a lot of the relationships that you have with others. How do you deal when you come across a coworker or an employee that may be starting to tend towards pessimism? We talked about Fortune 500 companies are straight up hiring people based on their likability. Mm-hmm. How do you handle those situations?
Well, at the Film Commission, it's just me. I'm the only one there, but I have a board of 11 or 12 people. We have a board of 11 or 12 people. I have to answer to them, and I try to, like I said, surround myself with those positive people, the Mike Browns and Jamie Goldsteins, and I work closely with Tom Katzenmeyer from GCAC and other local production companies. But as far as employees, when I was at Vital, the production company we started years ago, we had at one point, I think, 10 or 11 employees. It's tough to deal with. And sometimes you have to pull somebody aside and say, hey, you need to check your attitude and you need to leave it at the door because it can be a cancer and it can spread through your organization quicker than, you turn around and everybody's grumpy or everybody's being crappy for the day or they're, in the work, it all ends up that your work suffers.
Yep.
That's for sure. We did a lot of work and with Honda R&D out in Marysville and I became pretty good friends with a guy that works out there. And he told me a really good story about the people that they hire and the engineers that they hire out there. And he said that they hire a lot of people that aren't necessarily the top of their class. They look for those people who purposely aren't at the top of their class because they feel a lot of those people who are at the top of their class and getting straight A's is they're really book smart, but they don't have real world experience. And so they think that somebody who has just okay grades, that they're outside tinkering with cars and tinkering with things. And he said once they bring those people in like that, that they're great people, they're positive people, and they all gel and work together. I think that's a good story that shows that it's good to get out there and experience things. And again, it turns into positivity at some point.
Right. Are you into meditation? Does that help?
I should be, not as much. I don't do it as much as I should be. I would like to do it more. We just, my wife and I, there are some local Buddhist churches and organizations around, and we just started attending one and want to go back more than we really have the chance to with the kids. But it's really good. It's good for you. I would like to do it more.
Yeah, it is tough with kids. I tried to take mine to a meditation group. It didn't work.
Yeah, no.
They said, come back next time without the kids.
Yes. Yes, it does not work.
And another thing that's really good to help kind of help us maintain a positive outlook is kind of getting outdoors and walking around. And, you know, you're fit. Is that also part of your practice, kind of getting out there?
I mean, I don't do it enough, for sure. And, you know, it's been proven time and time again that successful people do that. Steve Jobs went for walks all the time. Mm-hmm. So being outside, connecting with nature is definitely something that is good for you. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm someone who doesn't do it as much as I should. Mm-hmm. I don't take the time. I should find the time. But I need to practice more what I preach.
Right, but you're owning it, which is like the first step towards making those changes. So you know that this is something that you can affect.
Yeah.
Okay. And I just want to let you know that the music you're listening to today on You Inc. with John Daugherty is some of his music from his early DJ days, so just a little bit of a treat. Okay, last question. I have read somewhere, and I quote, John D. 2024. You are already very heavily involved with politics in terms of film and working with legislature and very successfully in my ad. Can we be optimistic about this?
Where did you read that?
It was a comment in one of your Facebook feeds.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's pretty funny because I don't really pay a lot of attention to social media. Hence, that's probably why I didn't see that. You know, some people do, some people don't. You know, in light of recent happenings with the election and everything, it just gets me angry, and I don't like to go to that place.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, my wife will probably say, yeah, he gets mad when he talks about it because he lets it loose at home sometimes. So, but anyway, 2024, huh? I'm fine with that.
All right. Let's get the book.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you for surrounding us with your presence today.
Oh, no. Vice versa. Thank you for having me.
All right. And so we leave you with that positive outlook.
Love, I need a sweet, sweet love. Sweet, sweet love.
And now, a word from our person on the street.
So, hey, Captain Rob, can you tell us your thoughts on optimism?
Optimism. The things I've been worth doing in my life have come along with a lot of knocks. You get knocked down, and optimism is the thing that gets you back up and tracking towards what you want to do.
Are you in a good place?
I'm in a great place.
Was optimism the reason why?
Absolutely.
Can you tell someone how to do it?
I don't know that I can tell you how to do it. I can tell you an experience that I had.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear it.
It was actually on public radio.
Yes, please.
A friend of mine and I in Fort Wayne, Indiana, wanted to do an independent rock radio show. And the powers that be didn't think that fit the format, so we did jazz for a little while. And then we did some rock radio, and we were asked to go back to jazz. And we kept doing the rock. We did the jazz, went back to the rock, and went back and forth like that. And ultimately they said, hey, you know what? You guys can have your own show and do whatever you want. And we had a great time with it, and they're very supportive. But it took some trying, you know, it took some knocking down, and we were optimistic that one day they would see it the same way we did, and they did.
That's a fantastic share. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's our show for today, folks. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Rhea Greif, and you've been listening to You Inc. on 90.5 WCBE.